Where's my debit card?
Is it in my right pocket?
My left pocket?
Did I leave it in the bedroom? Maybe it's under the bed. Maybe the kids took it. And if they took it, then it's probably going to be flushed down the toilet by now.
Wouldn't it be great if you could press pause on the card panic? Well, now you can. With the Lloyds Bank mobile banking app, you can freeze certain transactions on your Visa debit card until you find it.
Oh, there it is.
Lloyds Bank, by your side. Mobile banking app available to UK personal internet banking customers with an iPhone or Android device. T's and C's apply.
Rise up! Rise up!
This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. This is episode 212, and, well, this is not for the faint of heart, this show, because it is on the heels of the Cardinals losing 45-10 for the second time this season. This had happened in a different fashion this year as they lose to the Los Angeles Chargers on the road 45-10. But this time it wasn't a disaster at the beginning. It was they had a 10-0 lead at the end of the first quarter and looked pretty good. And then everything fell apart. And so we're going to talk about kind of the disaster. The Cardinals have officially begun to clean house on the roster. That's kind of the theme of this show, episode 212. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site. My co-host is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's NFL site. And my goodness, Seth, this is not the best time to be a Cardinals fan, I would say, because every little bit, and this for the second week in a row. So after losing to the Raiders, there really was no hope yet. But then they give us just a little bit of hope again in the first quarter against a really good Chargers team. And then the wheels fall off. And I don't even understand exactly what happened.
Yeah, that's the tough part is, the Cardinals led 10-0 after one quarter and then were promptly outscored 45-0 in three quarters. And I went back and looked because I'm like, 45 points, that's quite a few. The Cardinals, the last three games combined, have scored 45 points. So what the Cardinals took to 12 quarters to achieve, the Los Angeles Chargers achieved in three quarters.
And so, yes, so we're not going to talk immediately about the game itself, because more importantly at this point is that the roster is changing. We are at the point of the year where wins and losses become, well, aside from the part that wins are impossible pretty much the rest of the way, wins and losses don't really matter now. And they're looking to the future, and there have been a bunch of roster moves over the last couple of weeks that we're going to talk about. So on this show, in episode 212, we're going to react to the moves that have been made on the roster, the moves that are likely coming or needs to come. Then we'll talk about the game. I mean, we'll grasp it strong. We're going to grasp at anything we can do for the positives. And then basically we're like, what the hell happened? Sorry about that. So what the heck happened in that game? And then close by talking about, well, has the team actually quit? And should we just blow this up? I mean, is it time to just start over? Cause yeah, that's what we'll start with. That's what we'll close with. So starting off, let us talk about the roster and what has happened over the last couple of weeks. The things are happening, and we have reached the point of the season where players who have not performed are being let go. Interesting moves, to say the least. First one was a week ago when they cut ties with Jamar Taylor, which, okay, guy that was on a two-year deal, you weren't saving him for the end of the season to let him go. That sort of made sense. They added to that. They made some moves this week. So goodbye, Benny Benwickery. one of Steve Wilkes' admitted favorites. Well, a move, as I'll talk about, I kind of, even though it seems weird that they do it, especially he's a special teams contributor, been in the system before, would be a free agent anyway at the end of the year, so he could potentially calculate into, you know, the compensatory pick. They cut Andre Smith. I think he might be the most despised offensive lineman in town since Levi Brown. Maybe. They cut ties with him. They just cut him loose, turning it over to Corey Cunningham, who's played well in two games at left tackle, now moves over to the right side, assuming DJ Humphreys will be healthy for the game this week against the Green Bay Packers. Otherwise, we're going to have a starting tackle duo of Corey Cunningham and Zach Goldich.
Woo! All right.
They also had in season-ending injuries. Josh Bynes hurt his thumb. He's done for the year. He goes injured reserve. Phil Dawson, who had missed a game and then kicked but missed another field goal, he was placed on injured reserve with the hip injury. Zane Gonzalez, former Arizona State standout, is now on the roster. They have also they didn't add any offensive linemen. They did, however, sign two cornerbacks. So David Amerson, they added a couple of weeks ago. They added Leonard Johnson. Now they've added Dante Johnson. Dante Johnson, that's his name, yeah. And
those aren't
Quentin real. Rollins.
I know who Quentin Rollins is.
So they've added those players. There has been they promoted Chris Jones from the practice squad. Wilkes mentioned him as a potential guy who they'd look at, and then they cut him today. And there is a report, it has not been announced by the team, that they have signed Cameron something or other. How do you pronounce that name? Shoot. What is that name? Cameron something or other off the practice squad is what they've added. So we've got some roster moves. We've got, in fact, two of those moves were exactly what we were talking about last week, right? Didn't we talk about on the show just a week ago that two of the moves lead directly into what we want to see? Corey Cunningham at right tackle and Zane Gonzalez as the kicker.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just one of those situations where it's time. Like, no offense, and I kind of said this last week, and I mean, you never see a 45-10 butt-whooping coming like that. Like, never. But at the same time, you saw that this team is bad. I mean, and that's putting it mildly, that this team's bad. And you and I talked about it, like, if this team is bad, which they are, why not find out if you have anything? And because the thing is, outside of Justin Pugh and maybe Mason Cole, And hopefully DJ Humphreys, but I mean, really, outside of Justin Pugh, financially, you're not invested into any of these guys. I know they picked up DJ's fifth year option, but
they can let him go. It wouldn't hurt them at all.
Exactly. They can still cut him. So you may need four offensive linemen. So what does it hurt to find out what you have in Corey Cunningham? Is he really going to be worse than Andre Smith? I mean, he probably will be in the run game, but I mean, you're only dropping back 19 times a game and you're giving up and he's given up two sacks. Like, you can't have that. It's just not something that can happen. So, you know, that was our point. Like, Phil Dawson, we've seen enough. Like, you're paying this dude $3.5 million and he's one of the least accurate kickers in football this year. And now
5 of 8, 62.5%. That's kind of bad.
And to be fair to him, he hasn't had a ton of opportunities. So,
but when he did last year.
Right, exactly. And so
he missed 8 kicks. So he made a career high 32, but he missed a career high 8 field goals.
Right. And it was something I wrote about today. Like, literally, they replaced Jay Feely with Chandler Catanzaro because Feely was too expensive and inaccurate. Then they replaced Catanzaro with Dawson because they needed a reliable veteran kicker. And in the 4 seasons with Feely and Catanzaro combined, they made less money than Dawson, and they both kicked better. So, like that was the thing. It was just a bust. I mean, it was. It's unfortunate. It was just a bust. And so again, like, find out, do you need a kicker? Like, is this a position you're going to have to, you know, have another kicking competition in this preseason? So, like, these are all moves that make sense. And I mean, the cornerback, you know, merry-go-round. Well, that's just Steve Keim, you know, being the GM. Like, usually they found a veteran by now who's going to get signed somewhere else, right? And then they'll just start again at the beginning of next year. But this year, that just hasn't happened.
It maybe David Emerson. He could be the answer, or Dante Johnson, or Quentin Rollins. I mean, they've all started games before.
Yeah, that's the craziest part, though. I mean, they have done three before, because they did Brandon Williams, and then they did somebody else before Tremont was completely ready and healthy. Oh, it was Williams Bethel or Bethel Williams, and then Tremont. But so they've done it before, but it's just crazy that we're in week what, 12, and they're just now getting to corner three. Like, yeah, that's kind of crazy.
It is. So the thing for me, the one concern, now I kind of get why they waited till now for Cunningham, and because what they'd seen in practice, they liked, but he hadn't had game reps. And when, in terms of knowing the offense, I'm sure Andre Smith had an edge there. I think Cunningham's almost all his reps came on the left side. And so DJ was still playing. And if DJ was hurt, John Wetzel was still the better option. But now you got to see it. Now that he's played two games and looked good, okay, moving over to the right side. But the one concern I have with that now is of course, hey, if he hasn't played on the right side, this might be a fantastic disaster. Except of his movement skills will be so much better, because the guy has elite athletic traits that you can't teach, because he's a former tight end. He grew, I mean, he added 100 pounds between his freshman and his senior year of college. The 36-inch vert when he's 6'5", 320 pounds, and the sub 540, that's ridiculous. And if he held up just fine against Melvin Ingram, who is no slouch as a pass rusher.
Oh, he's very good. And yeah, I mean, he had a nice game. He's had two good games. Now, again, you and I would probably be able to get in the way of the Oakland Raiders pass rushers. You know, so it's not like that first game, like you take it with a grain of salt, right? Like you're like, oh, this is probably, I mean, let's not get crazy. But that second game, Melvin Ingram's no joke. Like, he's a legit player. And you don't want to say shut him down, but I mean, he had a very good game. And you and I are talking about this off the air. And we talked about this, I don't know, 25, 30 times during the offseason. One of our favorite moves was the signing of Ray Brown as offensive line coach. And part of the reason why is his work at developing young, big guys. And maybe getting frustrated with the bad line play wasn't so much Ray Brown as it was you had four veterans who have proven to be injured and average or below at this point of their career. And Ray Brown's not a miracle worker. He is good at developing young talent. And all of a sudden you're seeing that with, well, Corey Cunningham looks like he could be a good football player. You know, Jess and I we're in the midst of a 2-9 season. We're not going to go crazy and say, oh, Corey Cunningham's the future at right tackle, but he could potentially be a guy that puts himself in the conversation.
He could be an answer, not necessarily the answer.
Yeah.
And we get to find out over the next several games if he is even a possibility, which is hey, why not? Why not? I think what we're seeing as well, I think Ray Brown's voice is being heard more because of the rookies that they've been adding rookies to the back end of the offensive line. They added Colby Gossett. They added Zach Goldich. They added Shelton Coleman. They added Rick Leonard. I'm sure some of these names don't sound like made up, but they're actual rookies out there in the league. But give Ray Brown a chance to develop these young guys. Have them pick up guys that have the athletic and size profile
that he likes,
so he can do what he can do, because he's put together good offensive lines before. That's good.
Right. I mean, one of the guys that you're going to hear about this offseason that should the Cardinals be interested? Darrell Williams. I mean, he was a guy like that. The guy that everybody wanted last offseason, Andrew Norwell. He was an undrafted free agent out of Ohio State. That's what he excels at. It's not getting Andre Smith back into game shape and teaching him how to block after 13 years in the league, or however long he's been in the league, 8 years in the league. You know, it's not getting Justin Pugh to stay healthy. It's not getting DJ Humphries to stay like he can't do that. That's not what he does, but it is developing young talent. If you and I were to say the one thing we're most disappointed in Ray Brown this year, I think we would both agree it has been the lack of development of DJ Humphries. And it's not that Humphries has been bad. It's just that he hasn't taken the next step we were hoping to see.
And once again, he's had the injury bug pop up again, that pesky knee.
Right. That's the craziest thing to me. So after Mason Cole started game 11, Mason Cole started 11 games in his career. He's only had a chance to start 11. DJ Humphries has started 27 games in his career. So
this is the end of his fourth season.
Yeah. So Mason Cole, despite being drafted three seasons later, is only a full season of games played behind DJ Humphries. Like, that's a baffling stat to me. Because, you know, one of the things Jess and I talk about when we get into draft time is availability is a prospect's most important ability. And for DJ Humphries to develop, he has to be able to play.
Right.
He has to be able to practice.
The other position, obviously, we want to see what Zane Gonzalez can do. We saw him here at Arizona State, one of the best kickers. And at least, because the team has already seen Matt McCrane. I'm sorry, Steve's his dad. Matt McCrane did well in the preseason. He did fine for the game that he was there. I don't know if they simply just liked Zane more. We know that Steve Keim liked Zane Gonzalez coming out of college and probably would have brought him over as an undrafted rookie had the Browns not drafted him. So
didn't they draft him in the third round, or am I making that up?
I think he was a day three pick. I don't remember, because it wasn't as egregious as Roberto Aguayo.
Maybe it was the fifth round.
I think it was a day three, and then you're okay with that. He was a Groza winner. It wasn't the ridiculous thing of drafting Robert Aguayo.
Yeah, it was the seventh round. Okay, so yeah, that's fine. That's nothing wrong with that.
A seventh round pick, you could draft me or you, and it would be fine because seventh round picks are throwaway picks anyway.
Exactly.
But it'll be interesting to see how he does over the last few games, and if he fails, well, you cut him loose, you bring back McCrane, or if he does well, I would say bring Gonzalez and McCrane in the offseason and have them compete. They both were great in college. They both have potential. They both have good legs. They both are nice and accurate. They're both good kids. And so it would be fantastic. And one thing I happen to know after conversations that I've had is that McCrane really likes it here. He really likes the organization. He likes the coaching staff. He likes the conditions. And so it'd be a good I would love to see, because at the same time, if Zane Gonzalez does well, I still don't want them just giving him the kicking job in the offseason. I still want them to bring someone in, because these are young players. And we've seen what happens to young players without competition, and they can sometimes turn. Chandler Catanzaro fell apart when he was Yeah. But at cornerback, so how many more starters do you think we're going to have? So we've had Jamar Taylor, we've had Benae Benwickery. This week it's going to be David Amerson. How long do you think he'll last?
Well, the way that the season's going, I'm going to say like two games, but I'm hoping that they give him the season. Like, that was my whole thing with Benwickery. I didn't understand why at this point. It's not like, I don't know, are you really going to find a better option on the street in week 11 or 12 of the NFL season? I have a hard time with that. And let's be completely honest. Yeah, they could have prime Darrell Revis across from Patrick Peterson, and the way their offense is working, I don't really know if it's going to make a difference. It's just going to be losing games, you know, 14 to 10 as opposed to 45 to 10. And so, well, and the way their run defense is playing, so maybe it's like 21 to 10. So that, I mean, that's kind of what the problem is that I feel like it's the old, like, finger in the dike thing. You just keep trying to plug it, and then more leaks spring up, and then you go, well, why isn't this working? And it's like, well, you have 19 leaks. You can't – and you only have 10 fingers. Like, what are you expecting to do here? I don't know. Like, I hope Amerson is a long-term answer. I'm realistic. It's week 12 of the NFL season. What are you
– and if you're signing a guy off the street in week 12, you can't expect much.
Exactly. And so, I mean, let's hope he's just productive at some level. Let's not even say productive. Let's hope he's consistent at some level, because that was what got Benwickery cut. Was that he went from playing with his hair on fire to all of a sudden he's getting beat by Marcel Aitman and Mike Williams like a drum. So it's like, all right, well, I guess we're on to the next one.
And, you know, there's one thing about this move that I was actually, and I think I can see it as a positive. Benwickery was an admitted favorite of Steve Wilks, and he still cut him. Now, was that the right thing to do? I'm sure that part of what went into that is Benwickery's approach might have changed in practice because of how the season was going. And so it became a necessity. But the fact that he was willing to cut a player that he believed in, but his play was not up to par. We remember Bruce Arians and Drew Butler. It cost us Marquee Christian and ball games. So that I liked it for that. I just thought it was a weird thing to do, because there's no reason why he couldn't stay at the back of the roster and contribute on special teams. Now, interestingly enough, notice which name does not come up at all as a possibility to replace him as the starter. That would be Brandon Williams. He did not mention him. And then they went in. So he said David Amerson. They said Chris Jones, a guy they brought up from the practice squad. He didn't even mention Brandon Williams. And then the team went out and signed two other cornerbacks this week. So we'll see what happens with that. Now, is there any other roster move that we can perhaps anticipate in the weeks to come? Oh, there obviously we Josh Bynes goes injured reserve. So that means what you'd like to think it means is that we're going to see more of Daylon Buchanan if he's healthy. Based on the depth chart, I don't think Buchanan's role changes. It's going to be Gerald Hodges in the Bynes role with Reddick next to him. And that is a little bit disappointing. But then again, you do need someone in the middle who can make calls. And Buchanan kind of proved he can't make calls.
Yeah, and that's what the concern is. You're getting to the point where you're kind of being forced to see things that you wanted to see kind of from the beginning. Like, no offense, nobody wanted to watch Andre Smith play football in 2018. Like, we've waited to kind of see Buchanan and Reddick get run together, even if it's just five games, like at least give us something. Because that's the thing. These are two first-round picks, and they've looked terrible and lost. Terrible being Buchanan and lost being Reddick. And it's
but
just
he
like,
sure works hard and gets to the – he gets to a lot of plays.
Yeah, I mean – yeah, like 6 or 7 yards down the field. Yeah, like he's right there in the pile after the running backs gain 7 yards. And so it's just – it's one of those situations. I know it's likely to be a dumpster fire, but let's be honest. The season's already a dumpster fire. So at least give your first-round pick some run and see if they can do anything. I mean, if Buchanan's not healthy, that's one thing. But when he's been a healthy scratch or played, you know, less than 10 snaps in over half the games this season, like that's just I don't get that.
Right.
You're a bad football team. You have a guy that had talent at one point. Now, if his body is just completely shot, that's another story. But if he still has some explosiveness, if he still can run, like get him on the field and see if he can figure out how to play the position. That way we know, hey, you need 2 or 3 linebackers this offseason.
Right. The one thing I do say I can understand if they just slide Hodges into that role is because of that position calls the defense. And at least in the offseason and definitely in the first in that first regular season game when Buchanan had that role, it was inadequate. He was unable to – the having to call a play made him play slow. And Buchanan can't afford to play slow because that's the one thing that he does well is move or did move. And that's the hard part. So if you put him in the – if they were to stick to like and actually play 3 linebackers, that would make sense. So that would be the only reason why, and I'm sure that's probably the reason why Buchanan's not going to get more run with Reddick is simply because that he's just not capable of calling the defense.
Well, I mean, like with Reddick, I mean, I'm also the point where I'm just asking him to do one thing on every down, like just take as much off the plate as possible and just let the athlete out, and so. You know, and Buchanan, it's just, is that slowing him down or is he just so, you know, weathered at this point in his career that it's not going to happen anymore. So, I mean, I think those are things you can figure out though. I mean, it's the last 5 games, like what's the worst? Actually, the worst thing that can happen is you start winning.
That's not going to happen. Don't worry about it.
But. But that's what I'm saying. I mean, you've lost games, what, 45-10, 33-0, like 22. Like, you've lost multiple games in blowout fashion. Like, the only way it gets worse is injuries or, I don't know, like a mutiny on the field where somebody, you know, goes after Wilkes or something. Like, I don't see how it can get worse because it's so bad. So, like, let these guys play. Like, let's see what they have. And I get that for coaches, that's a hard thing to do because you're basically waving the white flag. But, I mean, that white flag was flown long ago, man.
Yeah, the if you didn't give up before, the Pirates already came onto your ship and have taken it. They've taken control of it. So with that, we'll wrap up the talk of the roster reactions. Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We will look at what are the few small things that we can take away as positives from the loss to the Chargers. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about if any small things that we can take away that are positives from that game against the Chargers. And I, for one, am glad that there is still – now, granted, they're really bad at facing adversity. They don't know how to overcome it. They don't know how to get out of problems yet. And, you know, bad teams don't know how to do that. Teams that have little depth don't know how to do that because things have to stay on script. But there was the positive early in the game. We saw the offense again, something that, and this is something that's kind of sad. We have to look at, hey, they started the game effectively. It wasn't the Christian Kirk bomb play to surprise the 49ers. They methodically went down the field, 9 plays, got the touchdown. You know, they stayed on. They were able to move the ball just enough. They stayed out of through third and long because if they get to third and long, they can't do anything. They can't do anything at all. Now, things fell apart after the first quarter, but they came out and they had 108 yards of offense through the first quarter, 10 points, and they looked good. They looked like they were like, oh my gosh, is this the game we finally see a good Cardinals team? No, it was just a quarter.
Well, I mean, a quarter is better than some of the things we've seen, though. I mean, that's the thing that's crazy is that you go back a week, they had an okay start to the game. They had a putrid middle, and then they played okay offensively kind of at the end. And then obviously this week they just had like a couple, like one good series and then a half a good series. And then the wheels fell off. But that's the thing is like the script was on, which was good. You know, that's always important. You saw a nice throw to Fitz. It's always good to see Fitz catch footballs, especially for touchdowns. I mean, Corey Cunningham had a nice game. I do think that's important. I mean, offensively, I think that's about it. And then obvious, the obvious defensive ones, we saw the, not just the like flash of Robert Kimdiche. We saw a game where he was a completely dominant force along the defensive line.
So yeah, in 36 snaps, 36 defensive snaps, 8 tackles, 4 for a loss, 2.5 sacks. And he now is the, and he came into the game with 2 sacks. He now is the second on the team in sacks with 4.5. He actually leads the team in tackles for loss this season with 12. And then add to that, he's had another 6 quarterback hurries and 8 quarterback hits. He was exactly what we believe we should have seen. Probably that's the Kimdiche we should see a quarter to half of the games during the season. He doesn't have to be that every game, but there have to be multiple games like that. And then the other games are just fine instead of disappearing. Like even Chandler Jones is putting up mad numbers. He's got 11 sacks in 11 games. But what's probably the most impressive thing about him is that, what is it, in the last 2 years? So only 4 games, he hasn't had a sack. So he's always getting a sack. He doesn't have the crazy 4 and 5 sack games that you'll see from some players. He doesn't often have the 2.5 sack game that Robert Kimdiche has, but he's consistent. And this is what we can get from Kimdiche, and we've only seen it ever once in 3 seasons.
Right, and that's the disheartening, I guess would be the correct word. That's the disheartening thing. But it is one slight positive that we have to take away from this because you are kind of searching. You know, you saw a guy that, I don't know, is it motivation when engaged? Like, I don't know what the right adjective is to describe the focus that it took in that game for him to play up to that level. But I mean, for one game, he was the Cardinals' best defensive player. And I don't think coming into this year, we expected to say that at all.
No, he was supposed to break out this year. I was super high on what he was going to do this year. Now, the part that's great about this, and we kind of talked about on the day, he's kind of like the Dwight Howard, Shaquille O'Neal of the NFL, because he is probably, if you look at the physical talent he is on the defensive line as from the tackle position, there probably aren't five players in the league that are more talented than he is. Obviously, you can take an arrow. He should rival Aaron Donald in terms of production.
He should, and he's a guy that has ability that, you know, is pretty incredible to watch. And it just, I mean, it hasn't clicked for him. I mean, we're going to use a lot of buzzwords right now, but like, it's never clicked for him. He hasn't put up consistent effort. But I think the biggest thing is this, and I think you can lump DJ Humphreys into this conversation. These guys, and I'm not one to judge pain tolerance, pain level, anything of that nature. So I can, you know, I don't want anybody to think I'm questioning their toughness. But these are guys that both have struggled with what can only be described as nagging lower body injuries that continues to prevent them from playing not only full seasons, but at full effort when they are on the field. And that is that a lot of times, and I'm not saying this is the case with these guys, I just want that to be understood, but a lot of the times that is a mental aspect that players have to learn to overcome, that the twinge in your leg isn't that you have a pulled muscle or a torn hamstring or torn this or, you know, a sprain or anything like that. It's just you were just hit by somebody that's 340 pounds. Like, it's going to hurt your body. And so it's just, I, you know, again, I'm not saying that they're weak-minded or that they don't have toughness. It's just sometimes that's a bugaboo of a player's, and it just, it seems like that is something of them, because again, they've missed a ton of practice on top of missing games, or they're limited in practices so consistently. I mean, this isn't Carson Palmer limited, you know, like a guy that's produced Pro Bowl level type play for multiple years. These are young guys that, I mean, haven't even suited up for half the games they're eligible for. And so you want to see them on the field, because that's the only way that they're going to get to where they want to be.
Now, I can think of perhaps one other positive. It's right next to Kim Deacon. That's Rodney Gunter, whose play continues to be pretty solid. When they drafted Gunter, they were so excited about what he was. And when he played nose tackle that rookie season for Corey Peters when he tore his Achilles, he was solid. Then he disappeared for 2.5 years. And now he's playing productively. He's not super flashy, but I think he's showing, he's proving he is a starting caliber player. And he had the sack, the strip sack. So that was another, then for me, that was really all there was in terms of positives for the Cardinals in that game. Maybe the return game, because
I was going to say that the return game wasn't bad. Yeah, I mean, yeah.
I told you we were going to be just grabbing for things, and there's not much there.
There's really not. It's unfortunate.
So let's move on to the next part of the Rise of Sea Red podcast. We asked the question. So what the heck happened? What in the world happened against the Chargers? That's coming up next on Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And now we just have to ask, what in the world happened on Sunday where they went from being a team in control to a team in free fall? They got the ball first. They scored a touchdown. They force a quick punt. They get a field goal. They force a turnover. Then they miss a field goal. And then, well, no, the first, sorry, they give up a touchdown. So they start making mistakes after that next field goal. So after the first field goal, they start making some mistakes defensively. There's a couple offside penalties, a couple of coverage problems. Leonard Johnson gives up a 27-yarder. Then Mike Williams is open in the back of the end zone inexplicably. Then on the next possession, they get the fumble. And then they miss the field goal. And then after that, the Chargers caught on fire. And they couldn't be stopped. And they couldn't stop Phillip Rivers. And they couldn't stop any running back at all. Wasn't Melvin Gordon, Austin Eckler, Justin Jackson. Just name a guy. Heck, even Phillip Rivers. Phillip Rivers had his first positive rush of the season against the Cardinals. That's how bad it was. His very first one of the year. So the question is, what exactly happened where they went to being in control to then that this game's over?
Yeah, and that's the thing is the weirdest part is they responded after that. So they are up 10-0, but like that's kind of a fallacy because I mean the Chargers scored what, the first or second play of the second quarter. I mean, it's really quick. And then they come back out and they can't get going again on offense. And then all of a sudden, that play that we talk about all the time, like a defensive play that kind of can change the momentum of the game. And all of a sudden, you have a chance. I mean, you're in field goal range, basically. You have a chance to go up a touchdown again. And offensively, you kind of pee down your leg. I mean, we know the offense is bad. The pass to DJ I didn't understand because that was the 3rd and 3 play, and they threw it like 1.5 yards. And I get trying to get DJ into space, but if you're going to run a route that's short, get him in a space where he's square to the line of scrimmage and can try to make a guy miss, not where he's catching the ball and having to try to make a move while he's facing the opposite way. And then the kicker comes out, right? And at that point, the wheels fall off. And that, I think, is what was most discouraging is the defense had just made what could have been a potential and I mean, maybe Jess and I are over-exaggerating, but, you know, could have been a potentially game-altering type of play. Like, if the Cardinals go down and score a touchdown and they're up by 10 again, like, maybe they don't win. Maybe they lose, you know, 20-17 or something like that. But at least you're putting up an effort. But to get no points from a drive, and the drive is a strong word because I think they gained 7 yards. But to
get, that's all it was, yeah.
To get no points from a drive that – You started where you would only kick a 53-yard field goal, and then you move it up to a 46, and your kicker blows it. And then I feel like the response by the defense was, crap, here we go again, right? Yeah, like
that's really what it was. So here it turned on about 3 plays. Missed field goal. Touchdown to Melvin Gordon, that 28-yarder on a blown assignment. And then on the very next play, the Josh Rosen interception. Because here's how that next drive went after the missed field goal. Guess what happened on the very first play? Robert Kendiche sacks Phillip Rivers.
Right, and that's what's crazy.
But then after that, they get the first. Well, not only do they get the first down, so they can't get the tackle on Antonio Gates, Antoine Bethea's peg with the face mask. And then they even get – so they get another pass to Keenan Allen. Kendiche tackles Gordon for a loss. And then the next play, 2nd and 11, 28-yard touchdown. Then on the next play, interception. And then they score a touchdown again. And guess what? You know they're not coming back. It's 21-10. It's over. There was no chance in the world.
Right. Well, and that's the thing is the Cardinals are a bad team. And you know, this will be a theme for the rest of the season. The Cardinals are a bad team. We all know that. But bad teams can give good games to good teams. It's something that happens quite often, in fact. What they can't do is fall multiple scores behind good teams because they just don't have they don't have the ability to compete. They don't have the talent to compete. And that was the wind in the sails of the Cardinals. Like it was legitimately over as soon as like Jeff said, as soon as those three plays happened, the game was over.
They just couldn't do anything after that. Then after that, Phillip Rivers setting records. But it wasn't difficult to do because what do we know about the Cardinals and their defense? They're susceptible to the short passes with the linebackers. Austin Ekeler, he was 23 for his 25 for to his first 25 and goes 28 to 29. But let's look at this. Of the completions, of his 28 completions, of that, 20 of them went to running backs. 20 of them. Now, he did have a couple of, there were two or three really nice throws down the field, but most of it was dink and dunk and dink and dunk and dink and dunk, and the Cardinals just could not tackle. They could not tackle at all.
No, and again, when you look when we go back over the season, no matter what happens at the end, when we go back over this season, I think one of the biggest questions is going to be that Steve Wilks is going to have to answer is why is the defense so fundamentally bad? Not just schematically, but fundamentally, they're a poor tackling team. They're poor in coverage. They make mistakes that are, you know, assignment-based mistakes. And it's just – it's an odd thing to see that from a coach that's supposed to be a defensive guy. And the weirdest thing to me is this. Some Carolina Panthers fans have, like, kind of infiltrated Revenge of the Birds on articles here and there. And – they want Wilks back. So clearly he's had a positive, you know, experience in Carolina as a defensive backs coach in a single season as defensive coordinator. So is his message just getting lost, or are the players not buying in?
Or is it Holcomb? Because
or is Holcomb?
This is really it's Holcomb's defense. Wilks said that now it's Holcomb's defense within the construct of what Wilks believes, but it is Wilks making the play calls. It is Wilks being the defensive coordinator. That's kind of the big question here is how much of the defense is on Wilks and how much is on Wilks for giving a guy who's never been a coordinator be the coordinator and call plays. Not like Bruce Arians was calling, like he had Harold Goodwin as his offensive coordinator, but he wasn't calling plays.
No, and that's the thing is like, so you're getting to the point now where, you know, how do you fix this and what, like, are there steps this season? Obviously, like, from a win standpoint, no. But, you know, is Wilks a guy that you can keep around and win with? And that's the craziest part to me is, I mean, when this started, if it went sideways, I just assumed it was going to be because the offense was bad. I never thought we'd get to the point that we're questioning the defensive portion of what's going on for the Arizona Cardinals. And and if they even know what's going on.
Well, another big issue. I mean, here's the stat that we said that they had 180 yards of offense after the first quarter. That's a nice pace. That's a nice pace. They're on pace for more than 400 yards. They gained a total of 41 yards the entire rest of the game. 41 yards in
that's really bad.
41 yards in 9 possessions after that. So they averaged 4.5 yards per possession thereafter. They couldn't do anything. Now, you look at the pressure stats. Rosen was only sacked twice. He was only hit twice. And those 4 instances were all Joey Bosa, and they were all given up by Andre Smith. But you could tell if you're watching the game on the eye test, he was under pressure. So he didn't get hit a lot, but he was certainly in a hurry to get the ball away. And between his rookie decisions and the inability of his playmakers to make plays or to be open or to make contested plays, it just really it's just a recipe for disaster, because once they get they are not a team that can get out a 3rd and long right now. They can't do it. It has to be 3rd and less than 5 for him to do it. And beyond that, they're in big trouble, especially when you have and against the Chiefs, it was kind of the same way. When you have good edge rushers and you're in obvious passing downs, and at least one side of your edge protection is bad, it's just a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, and so one of the things that's been troubling, and I think when we were excited about Leftwich and maybe bringing back some Arians concepts, I think one of the things that we didn't expect to see was the kind of belligerence to give help to bad offensive linemen, right? And it was something that – what game was it that you brought up for Palmer a couple of years ago, and you know where he was just getting killed? And then in this game, like you said, Bosa was kind of a one-man wrecking crew. And if it's kind of obvious that you're in a passing situation, and I get wanting to get as many guys into the routes as possible, but you know, don't you just want to like send somebody over to help Andre Smith? Because I mean, the last sack, did he even touch Bosa, or was like Bosa just by him?
He was just there. It was like he morphed from, he teleported from the, it was like a Madden glitch is what that was.
And so, you know, it's just like, why are we like, what is going on? But, and so that's an interesting thing. And to me, that goes back to coaching. And I'm not saying Leftwich is a bad offensive coordinator, but it's just one of those things. That's like, help your guys, help your other guys. But the other thing is this, I don't know if you saw this, and I text a buddy, Matt Harmon, who used to work for NFL.com, and he's now with Yahoo Fantasy, to kind of explain something to me. So I don't know. Again, I don't know if you saw this, but the easiest throws attempted per NFL Next Gen. So like easiest throws: Derek Carr, Andrew Luck, Eli Manning, C.J. Beathard, Tom Brady. The hardest throws: Josh Rosen's the hardest. Like, so Rosen attempts the most difficult throws out of any quarterback in the NFL. So I asked Matt Harmon, I'm like, what the heck does this mean? And so Rosen's passes travel further in the air. His receivers get less separation. He throws more passes near the sideline, and at the same time, he's the closest to being sacked. And so like all of these things round up to saying, like, when Josh Rosen drops back to pass, every pass he throws is the hardest one in the NFL because the offensive line doesn't protect him. The routes that are being run by receivers are mostly not good. And then the route concepts are bad. And so it's like, what are we doing to help the rookie? Like, shouldn't the rookie be getting, wouldn't we want him getting kind of easy throws to make, like throws that are safe and short and getting him into a rhythm? And instead he's having to throw, you know, making the most difficult throws in the NFL per this next gen stat. And I'm not a big next gen stat guy. Like, I'm not, because if I have to read a breakdown of what the heck you're talking about to understand what the stat means, like, I'm not sure it's always a useful stat. But I do think it's interesting that a statistic that takes into account how much separation a receiver is getting and how much separation and time to throw a quarterback has between the pass rush and when he's hit all point to Rosen being in a very bad circumstance. And now, Jess, you pointed this out earlier. Like, the eye test tells us this. Like, receivers really aren't open very consistently. And when they are, they tend to drop footballs. But then also, Rosen's consistently having to move off his spot to make throws. And so, again, like, as an offensive coordinator, and even in youth football, like, I coach 9 and 10-year-old youth football. Like, we try to make it really simple for the kids, right? Like, we try to say, hey, this is your job on this play, and we want to make sure that it's easier for everyone else. And I know NFL is like a whole nother like universe, but isn't there a way to make things easier during the game? Because it seems like the script, which is usually what, 10 to 15 plays, it seems like when the script is out, that nothing is easy for the Cardinals.
Yeah. And here's the thing, because we've heard comments from Steve Wilks as well on this, and I think some of the issues are Rosen himself, that he's trying to put these balls in these tight windows, because he is throwing a lot of passes to covered players, and the Cardinals players don't make contested catches. There are a number of instances, and Wilkes says this over and over, and maybe this makes sense why the Cardinals had Sam Bradford as their starter to start with and that they signed Mike Glennon. He keeps saying, take the check down, dump it off. And he said, look at what Philip Rivers did. he took the check down. He took the check down, and they made plays. And while that's not exciting, that is – and after a lot of years with Bruce Arians, it sounds bad, especially when we went through Bradford and Matt Leinart was captain check down and people didn't like that. But look, that's the NFL now. Don't make it hard on yourself. Throw to the guys who are open and look that direction more quickly, because that's part of the issue with Rosen is he's not making those decisions quickly enough. No, partially because of pressure and partly because – he's still trying to make bigger plays.
Exactly. And so that's the thing, is you can't – if you ever watched Rosen play in college, and from comments, I'm not sure all our fans did. And that's okay. I mean, you don't have to. Like, you don't have to like college football or watch college football. But one of the biggest knocks on Rosen is that he trusts himself too much. Like, he tries to make plays. And I think when you're a good quarterback, and I do think Josh Rosen is a good quarterback.
Well, Carson Palmer was guilty of it too.
Right. And when you're on a bad team, you tend to press and try to make plays that are very unlikely to work. And you saw that with Palmer in Cincinnati and at times in Arizona. And then you saw the other side of it where – you have faith in your talent, and that talent wins out at times. At times being the key word. But the thing is this. The Cardinals, from like a receiving corps standpoint, have and I think I'm being nice when I say this, a two at best in Larry Fitzgerald and a three in Christian Kirk. They don't have a one. They don't, I think in the right, like if you, like a, the really right system, you could get number two type receiver numbers out of Fitz. And same type of thing with Kirk. I think he'd be a good number three in the right system. Like if he, like in Atlanta or something where they have two really good receivers already.
And just to clarify, this is talking about right now. Christian Kirk right now.
Right. We're not talking about down the line. Like we're not saying, oh, Kirk's not going to turn in anything. No, I think the Randall Cobb comparison is actually very apt. Like I see a guy that has to work on the nuances of playing wide receiver, but my God, just get the ball in the kid's hands and let him run. Right. Like that's the thing. But so that's the thing. Those are your top two targets. And let's be fair. After that, it's David Johnson, and he hasn't been the receiver he was this season. And then it's, I mean, nothing.
Ricky Seals-Jones has not been an impact player. Jermaine Gresham has made a couple of plays, but they don't utilize him in the passing game as much. Trent Sherfield, just a guy. J.J. Nelson, he can draw pass interference. That's about what he's good for.
Right, and Chad Williams hasn't been healthy in, what, 4 weeks? Nope.
And five, not five productive. Eight. I mean,
right.
it's just a sad group of playmakers overall.
Right. And that's what, and I think that's one of the biggest problems with the whole situation is like your rookie quarterback's in a really negative spot, but then he's a guy that doesn't see it that way. And so I think, I mean, at times I think that's a positive, like it's good to have a rookie quarterback or any quarterback that believes in themselves and like, hey, I can pick these guys up. And that's what Rosen is doing. But at the same time, it causes him to make really poor decisions. And so it's just that it's that thing where I don't know if you necessarily want to pull him back because do you want to break him of being a guy that's fearless with the football? Probably not. But at the same time, you don't want him to then get gun shy because he throws, you know, 32 interceptions in a season. So there is a nuance to it.
And with that, let's move on to the more, you know, less five. Well, I don't know. It's coming next on the last segment of the Rise of Sea Red podcast. We're going to talk about, what needs to happen? What do we just blow up? What do we do next? Is it coach? Is it coach GM? Do we flood the roster? We just basically change over the roster, burn it to the ground. That's kind of next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the last segment of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. And the question is, do we just burn it all down? Leave it down to the bare bones. Say you've got a few players. So you've got Josh Rosen. You've got David Johnson. You've got Christian Kirk, Chandler Jones, Patrick Peterson, and beyond Buda Baker, and beyond that, start over? I mean, what do you do with this team? What we talked about last week is to, and I am a proponent of giving Steve Wilks another year, but that's under this preface is, if you fire him and you leave Steve Keim to make the decision to hire the next coach, how in the world are we going to expect anything different? Because they hit a home run with Bruce Arians. But let's not get this wrong. Steve Keim and Michael Bidwill are complicit in how this team is constructed because their belief in Wilkes initially, and then the decisions that were made with the roster. They were cash strapped, but they, every single move that was made has backfired. Like everything that dealt with the draft so far looks good, but every other move in free agency and roster construction has backfired badly.
And I think that was the basis of the issues from the beginning, is that they went in with like this ideal of the best case scenario. And then when it didn't work, I mean, think about it in this sense. The biggest moves they've made this offseason that weren't involving the draft. Sam Bradford no longer a part of the organization. Mike McCoy no longer a part of the organization. You know, they traded for Jamar Taylor. I mean, it's just a seventh round pick in 2020, but he didn't even make it like halfway through the season. I mean, two games in, he was benched. You know, like you go down the line, Andre Smith no longer with the team. Like this has just been, like you said, it from every step of the way, it was a disaster and it just didn't work. Justin Pugh's on IR again.
It's a fantastic failure.
Right. And so Jess and I talked about this off the show, and I go back and forth on it every week. And I want to first back Jess, because I saw a couple people tweet at him on Twitter. Jess has maintained the same ideals from the beginning. What happened on Sunday, Jess has said, if that happens multiple times, then you have to fire Wilkes. So Jess, when he comes back and says, I still, you know, think you give Wilkes another year, he's been consistent with that because it hasn't happened multiple times. Now, that's not to say it won't happen multiple times, at which point Jess will then, you know, move to the other side. But, you know, you've been consistent in saying, like, yes, if it's something, if 45 to 10 happens, you know, we talked about this in the last eight games, and you know, four of those are 30 plus point blowouts, I think you have to move on from Wilkes. And it's just from a team standpoint. Like, you can't be in a league that is putting up just record pace numbers offensively and be one of the historically, you know, worst offenses. And then, oh, by the way, take a team that was top seven defensively for the last 5 years and turn them into a bottom 10 defense in the NFL. Like, it just, I understand tearing it down to build it back up, but that's almost too much.
Yeah. And here's what I say. If you're going to get rid of Wilkes, you've also got to get rid of Kine. Because you need to do something fundamentally different. Are we going to get something fundamentally different from Kine? If you look at, and you know, here's the crazy thing with how terribly this season has gone. The Cardinals would have been better off to have never signed Bradford and gone into the season with Mike Glennon as their starter, knowing that, hey, we're going to see what Glennon's got. And hopefully we'll get a quarterback. And they happened to back into Rosen. That just happened. They didn't have any plans for that. They didn't say, okay, we're all in on a quarterback. It just happened that way. But they should have not signed Bradford. They should have just gone with Mike Glennon as the starter going in, or honestly, Rosen from day one and prepare him like that. And you'd be in a much better place, because then you'd have that $20 million to spend elsewhere to get, instead of having to, you know, piece together an offensive line with Andre Smith and Justin Pugh, or to spend money on Bryce Butler, or to have to trade a seventh round pick for Jamar Taylor. Maybe you can keep Tremont Williams. No, Tremont Williams wanted to go back to Green Bay. That's something he wanted, to go home, where his NFL home was. He wanted that. But here's the thing. We talked about it off the air. What has outside of this most recent draft, he's been, you said it, he's fundamentally flawed in the way he approaches his draft in terms of roster building.
Yeah, and that's kind of what the issue has been, is that when he constructs a roster, I mean, in today's NFL, there's this idea of creator and preventer. And so a creator is obviously quarterback, preventer is obviously guys that stop the quarterback. And so when you look at it from that perspective, creator, obviously he finally drafted Josh Rosen, but before this season, he had drafted one quarterback in the fourth round in 2014.
Logan Thomas. Drafted Logan Thomas.
Who would be the best tight end on the roster right now. But, anyways, so, and then, but the preventer thing is what kind of baffled me. So preventers are considered pass rushers and cornerbacks. So in all of his drafts, all of them, like every single one of them, Keim has drafted one preventer in the top 58. One. That's it. Robert Kimdiche in 2016. Now, I said, if you want to give him credit for Chandler Jones because he traded a second-round pick, okay, I'll let that go too. But for a team that has been searching and searching and searching for interior pass rush, for a cornerback opposite Patrick Peterson, to never – I mean, to literally never put any of your high-level draft picks into that is just absurd to me. He's drafted one corner in the first 2 days, and that was Brandon Williams. And as Jess has pointed out a number of times, it's not like Brandon Williams was a corner. Like he was a running back that played 500 snaps at cornerback. And so then you look at what he has spent draft picks on, and he's drafted three wide receivers, three off-ball linebackers, and two safeties. So eight players that most teams find later in the draft, he's using with high-end picks when he has needs at the most important positions in the NFL. The guys that get paid the most, he's ignoring those positions and picking guys that – I mean, look at the salaries for safeties and middle linebackers. They don't get paid anything. Now, if you're like a high-end number one receiver, obviously you get paid well. But that's not what he was drafting. And so when you look at that, it's crazy. And I think I was going to bring this up, this like little anecdote, and it was been bothering me. So everybody's been complaining about the Cardinals' refusal to move up for Mahomes or Watson last season, and that it would have had them in a better position. You know, maybe even Arian sticks around, blah, blah, blah. But I mean, that was a trade up. They were going to have to move up. They knew the cost. They didn't want to pay it. That's fine. What I found more interesting, and I'll have to go back and like find the tweets to put it into a story, but Mike Jarecki and John Gamadoro have separately tweeted out that the Cardinals would have drafted Hassan Reddick or Malik Hooker over Marshawn Lattimore, who is a very good corner, defensive rookie of the year in 2017. So they would have drafted a safety or a linebacker over a corner.
Not only that, a projected linebacker, because Hassan Reddick wasn't a linebacker.
Right. So. Yeah. And so to me, it just shows the fundamental issue in the schematic building of a roster, because you're talking about another safety and another linebacker over a corner, which has been a revolving door since what? I mean, even before Peterson was here, they've never had two, but I mean, they've needed another one literally every offseason since 2011. And so it's a weird and different building style. And it worked when you had Bruce Arians, because you were able to get Carson Palmer and you were able to fill the offensive line needs in free agency. And now all of a sudden it's not working and you're still building that way.
Right. And they didn't have the cap space to do much. And it was, they got caught in the trap that they felt that they were close enough to be competitive, and had their work, had the moves worked out, they would be competitive. The problem is they didn't. And so perspective is part of the problem here. If we had been, if we had been sold on this is a, we're going to see what we can do, but we're building, but they keep saying this is a retool, not a rebuild. And they were retooling from a 7-win and an 8-win team. So I guess that's what we get for expecting that. And then when their moves don't work, the problem is that now granted, they do have a lot of cap space. If they go into this offseason and blow it up, where they not only let go of the coach, don't know what type. So we're going to be looking at a new defensive and offensive system. We're going to be losing some of the coaches that we thought highly of coming into this season. Leftwich, Larry Foote, Ray Brown, Kirby Wilson. So there are another number of coaches that will not be with the staff. Because a new coach is going to want to bring in his new people. Because guess what? Hiring Wilkes and giving him coaches that they wanted is as Steve Mike McCoy was apparently Steve Wilkes' plan for Wilkes. That Mike McCoy was Kime's plan for Wilkes. I'm sure that there was a strong recommendation from Kime to keep guys like Leftwich and Larry Foote and Kevin Garver. Those guys. It was heavily influenced in the decision to keep them, and so are you going to force coaches on a staff for the new coach, or are you going to have to get a new general manager? In which case, you're going to have massive roster reconstruction because you've got to have a GM. The GM's going to have to want his players, and so not only are we rebuilding again, we're also now giving Josh Rosen a third offensive coordinator, and we don't know the direction of the team because we don't know what type of team this is going to look like moving forward. And so that's the downside to this. So like if you're ready to blow this up, this is not what the Rams were when they brought in Sean McVay, because not only did they bring in Sean McVay, they brought in Wade Phillips, a brilliant defensive coordinator. If you look at his streak, doesn't matter where he is, his teams go to the postseason, and he already had. Now, granted, he had a top-rated quarterback. He had a guy in Robert and Todd Gurley. Then they went out and solidified the offensive line. They already had a top defensive player in Aaron Donald and some other talent then around defensively. That they had always had a solid defense. So they had Michael Brockers, and then you had Quinn, and then you've had all these other guys. But you had a defense in place already that was very good. You're not going to have that going next year because we don't know if this defense isn't good this year. You're going to bring in new people, and guess what? This is not going to be a good team next year. It might be a competitive team next year.
Right, and that's what you got to figure out is, are these players willing to buy into what Wilkes is selling? If not, then are you willing to make wholesale roster changes again? And if you are, you know, then you keep Wilkes and Kime. The problem becomes this. If you make a coaching move, and like Jess is saying, a GM move, you're likely making wholesale roster changes as well anyways. So that's the hard part. Like the best case scenario is that this is a really fluky season, you fix the offensive line, find a wide receiver to take some pressure off and get a competent and your offense takes steps forward next year. But that's saying that this isn't broken, and I'm not sure that this isn't broken. So that's what the problem is, and that's where they're at right now. And that's what the frustrating thing is when this was all happening last year, or you know, this offseason, we didn't think that it was broken, and now it definitely is broken. It's just like, is it something that can be fixed, or is it just like something that needs to be completely rebuilt?
And that's the decision to have to make. So what we've got to see is this team has to be competitive. It has to have life for more than a quarter. It can't go through these 45 to 10 games. If they're losing like they lost to the Chiefs, no one's going to feel that disappointed at this point because they're making changes to the player rotation. If they're losing games like the 26-14 where they looked and felt competitive, then you can start saying, okay, this is something to build on. The Cardinals have taken two very huge steps backwards with between the loss to the Raiders and the loss to the Chargers. And that's a problem. They didn't make progress. And if they're not making progress, then you have to change things. But it's going to be ugly. You can't just get rid of Wilkes. You have to change the entire front office.
Yeah, and that's what the problem is. And I just don't know if Michael Bidwell's willing to eat that contract.
I know. That's the thing.
Well, not that contract, those contracts, because right. It'll be two contracts.
It, not only that, it'll because with a all bunch of those coordinators, I bet most of those coordinators are on 2-year deals.
Right. So it'll be.
It's eating a whole lot of contracts.
It is. And that's what the question becomes. And so now you look at it and go, okay, where do you go from here? And honestly, it's a tough question to answer. And at this point, I mean, after the last two games, I would say you have to blow the whole thing up. But like you said, if the next five games, they show some, they're more closely, you know, looking at the Bears and Chiefs type of games, I think you can sell team the fans on another year. But if you're looking at Raiders and Chargers, like, yeah, it's over.
And unfortunately, they play the Packers this week. We're not even going to talk about the game coming up against the Packers. We're talking about it. We'll talk about the results. We don't even worry about that game. And with that, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening to the Rise Up C-Red podcast. As always, we'll be back again next week.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up C-Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.
A good summer, finally. When your kids go to bed, ugh, finally. Making a profit, finally. A business bank doing something different, finally. Like giving cash back on your business account. Introducing the new Santander 123 Business Current Account. Finally, a proper reason to switch. Cash back up to £300 annually on credit turnover. Monthly fee £12.50 for UK-based companies with up to two directors, owners or partners. 18 plus T's and C's apply.